Presented here is a free teaser for this month's edition of the Top Rope Nation Classics Patreon bonus podcast. Every single month, we release a deep dive on a classic wrestling event as voted on by our supporters on Patreon. It's a true historical deep dive. The only place to hear these shows in full? Join the Patreon page for just $5 per month. The link is right here in the podcast description. Patreon is the best way to support the show. So click that link in the episode description and read all about it and enjoy this special free preview. Episode 51, I do believe, of Top Rope Nation Classics here, February 2024 edition. Ryan Drosty with Justin Joint, Jesse Velasquez. The patrons have voted once again, going back to 1997. Justin Joint, what's in the glass tonight? How are you feeling about this one?
I'm keeping it pretty simple tonight, just doing a G&T beef eater. Not doing too bad tonight, other than this freaking Iowa weather, where yesterday was in the 70s, this morning was in the 60s. By the time I got off work, it was in the 20s. Tomorrow morning, we will be in the negative wind chills, possibly. So what a great time.
Dude, we're talking like a 70 degree swing. Yeah, it was like mid-70s when I came home from work yesterday. I had shorts on yesterday, and now the wind is howling outside this window right next to me, and it's nuts out there, man.
It was sleeting when I got off work.
Yeah. Crazy. What's it like up there, Jesse?
Identical, just probably 5 degrees colder all around, I would say. We had a 62-degree day yesterday. The wind is howling out my window as we speak. And then since this weather is just going topsy-turvy, it's going to be in the 60s and 70s over the weekend. So when I travel to your neck of the woods, rumor has it, it's going to be 75 on Sunday.
Looks like a nice weekend. It's just like this weird 24 hours where we get the normal February weather back in this weird winter. And now here we are. Well, Justin, so you got the G&T. Jesse, you got anything in the glass?
Very little. As I spoke to you guys about on the flagship show, I do have some decent news to follow after this, but I do have some THC, little acre, okay. five milligrams of THC and CBD. So my Friday is insane this coming up here this week. So it looks like I'm going to have my athletic endeavor on Thursday afternoon, which means I can probably drink with you guys for the Revolution preview.
Ooh,
nice.
Very nice. You'd love to hear that. Well, here's what I got in the glass. I was looking at my liquor cabinet. I'm like, what would be appropriate for In Your House Final Four? And then I realized, Final Four, I got Four Roses, small batch.
Ooh.
And had just enough left for a good, healthy pour of that. So I finished out the bottle tonight for this one. But I also have, in case I need a chaser, because that's probably going to go down fairly quickly, very basic Coors Banquet. Something a little lighter. So there we go. I'm pumped about this, you guys. 1997, this my favorite year in wrestling. I say it over and over, always willing to cover a 1997 show. This was a close vote though on the Patreon page. I think it only beat out the February 89 Milwaukee edition of Saturday Night's Main Event by a single vote, if I remember right. So this was really, really close, squeaked it out. But some of the people that are on a Patreon page that I talk to quite a bit were messaging me pumped that this one, they wanted our take on this one.
Oh, and okay.
Probably because we always talk up 1997. Yeah, no pressure or anything. No pressure.
you guys are Bret Hart connoisseurs, Ryan. You guys are going to be fine.
We both got Bret Hart shirts on. Look at that.
Yeah, you two are going to carry this show. I'm just going to sit back, relax, and strap on my seatbelt.
So I was telling you guys off air, it's odd because we have covered 97 a lot on the pod. And, you know, we always do this thing where we talk about where we were at in our wrestling fandom, what was going on in the world. And some of this will be different, like with the movies and the music and stuff. But I mean, how many times have I said the 1997 NBA Finals, the Chicago Bulls over the Utah Jazz, 4-2? I don't know what else I can share about it other than I very much remember the flu game. Game 5 that year is burned into my memory, and game 1 where Jordan hit the game winner from the left corner 3-point land in the United Center, and then he did the fist pump afterwards. That was game 1 of the 97 finals, I do believe. So I remember that one pretty clearly. And you know, Jesse, you have mentioned that actually, never mind. Not Pittsburgh. It was the Red Wings that won the 97 Stanley Cup. Detroit Red Wings over the Flyers 4-0.
My brother's favorite team was the Detroit Red Wings during this time. Everybody was wearing the Sergei Fedorov Nikes. Those things were very, very styling back in 1997.
There was a kid up the block for me around this time, and I was trying to get more into hockey, and he was a huge Red Wings fan. I kind of remember watching this team a little bit here and there. So that was what was going on in June of 97. Now, Jesse, should we talk about the Super Bowl?
The 97 Super Bowl? You're okay.
You sure? Sure. Super Bowl 31? I mean, 96 season, but 97 Super Bowl. Green Bay Packers over the New England Patriots, 35-21.
They're very, very quick to remind you about it, too.
Yes. You know, I would say at that point in time, I was 13. A lot of people liked Brett Favre around here, and I didn't know as much about the Packers-Bears rivalry at that point in my life. I can't say I was like super hateful about the Packers winning as a Bears fan that year. So I wasn't that negative on it. You know, I kind of liked Brett Favre at that point in time in my life. Now, Justin, the 96 World Series, Yankees over the Braves, 4-2.
Hell yeah. I was having myself one hell of a fall and winter here. With the Yankees having just won the World Series. And as of the date of this show, In Your House Final Four, almost 2 weeks prior, your boy lost his virginity.
Holla!
That's amazing.
WWF In Your House Final Four.
Live at the UTC Arena, Chattanooga, Tennessee. They had 6,399 fans in the building, a live gate of $76,762, according to Dave Meltzer at the Wrestling Observer Newsletter. It was just a little bit shy of being full. They set up the building for a lesser capacity than usual. They curtained it off for about a 7,500-seat configuration, so a little bit short of a sellout. But overall, a nice vocal crowd at the higher points in the show, at least. Mm-hmm. On pay-per-view, this show did a 0.5 pay-per-view buy rate, which translated to 141,000 domestic buys. And that's according to WrestleNomics. And, you know, when it comes to how these shows were doing at the time, like the 1995, that's in dollars, not the year, the $19.95 pay-per-views, the In Your Houses. I mean, this is about what they would do. 141,000 for Final Four, which actually the Rumble that year, the month before, only did 196,000. But the next In Your House after Mania 13, take the Revenge of the Taker, that only did 142,000, almost exactly what this show did. 1,000 more a year did 218,000 domestic buys, which was actually less than SummerSlam 97, which did 235. But yeah, I mean, when you look at the In Your Houses, Cold Dan Hell 163, Canadian Stampede 171, Ground Zeroes down to 136, Bad Blood 186, Degeneration X in December 144. They're all kind of in that same neighborhood. So Justin, did you watch this live? I didn't ask in the intro. Jesse, you weren't watching WWF. Did you watch it live, Justin?
No. I don't think I saw it until possibly even like years later. I mean, obviously I found a lot of highlights and stuff like that, pictures in the wrestling magazines, but no, it was a long time after this show before I actually got to see it.
I purchased the Coliseum video on eBay probably in like 99 or 2000. It had been a couple of years. I went on this run where I bought a bunch of them on eBay after they were all out of print when I was in high school. It's like either 99 or 2000. So that was when I saw the full show. I do remember listening to this through the Scrambled channel on pay-per-view that night, though. Jesse, you any idea when you watched this the first time?
Last night?
What about the main event? The undercard, I can believe.
Yeah, the main event I have seen two other times. I watched the first time was about a decade ago, and then the second time was for the Steve Austin draft.
Yeah. Yeah, so I think I saw it 2 or 3 years after the fact. Loved the main event the first time I saw it, and I think I watched it again when we did our Bret Hart draft the first time. So I've seen it a handful of times over the years. The undercard, only seen once, ever, for good reason, which we will get into here in just a minute. This show, now I wanted to go through how it was received at the time. So in the Wrestling Observer newsletter, you know, Meltzer would always do thumbs up, thumbs down, thumbs in the middle. And 64.5% of the percent of the audience gave this a thumbs up. 9% gave it a thumbs down. And 26% in the middle. I'm guessing that main event took a lot of people out of the thumbs down to in the middle at bare minimum. But yeah, it's 64% thumbs up. So it's not an overwhelming home run by any means, but more people liked it than disliked it, at least at the time. And so I think the first time I watched this, I was thinking like the arena looked really small to me compared to the typical arenas that they would run. It actually looks very similar, Justin, to the Five Seasons Center in Cedar Rapids that had sold out, like very similar setup in how the concourses look and everything, and seats about the same amount of people. Not like WWF was lighting the world on fire in February 97. So, I mean, the size of the arena makes sense. But so they get into the show. The opening video, it's got the same guy doing the voiceover that Austin would do them in 96, 97. I thought this opening video was kind of weak, though. Pretty short. Not a lot to it.
I agree. I mean, it makes, I guess, since they were planning on showing the entire I Lost My Smile interview basically later on in the show, it makes sense that they only showed a brief clip of it in the opening, but it felt very abrupt going to that. And then it's like they completely went away from it. Like it was a hard cut, it felt like.
Yeah. I also, what do you guys think about the logo being the pyramid for Final Four? I guess I was kind of thinking like, why a pyramid? It's just because there's four sides. I mean, I don't really get it. What's the point of a pyramid? We got it on the background. You can't really see it here on the video stream, but I always thought the logo for this was kind of odd, the pyramid, but that's what they go with. And then the entranceway. So I couldn't remember how many of these In Your House events in this era didn't have the old house entranceway. So I went back and I looked at a few of them. So Beware of Dog in May 96 didn't have it. They used this, which was like the Superstars entrance with just like the steel beams. I think Buried Alive also did not have it. But outside of that, like the In Your House, It's Time in December, that used the house. And they used it after this too. So I'm not sure why like they were going back and forth between having the Superstars entrance and having the In Your House entrance. I do know that they had Superstars in that building that morning, but it was just like it was live from the building and it was just the empty arena. So I don't know that it was a necessity by any means, but there's your tie into Superstars, I guess. But pretty plain entranceway too, and not a lot of sparkle to the look of this show. Did you guys have any observations about that?
Just that I think whatever budget they had for the stage, they put towards fireworks instead, because they had some good displays as far as that goes, especially at that time. Because for some reason, like, I guess we just kind of got spoiled with it eventually, you know, going into the late 90s, early 2000s. But I didn't remember at this time them using fireworks this much, especially, I mean, Jesus, Wild Man Mark Merrill getting that fireworks display. Holy shit.
Also in the building that's that size, it's not that big of an arena.
Yeah.
Yeah, you have to wonder if, like you mentioned, Superstars in the morning, if it was a too quick of a transition time to reset the stage or get all that stuff going on. I don't know.
Yeah. So that was just one thing I noted. Interestingly, on commentary, you get Jim Ross and Jerry Lawler, no Vince McMahon. Apparently, McMahon wanted to be backstage to make sure everyone's ego was in check for the Final Four match and that everyone understood what was being expected of him. That's according to Dave in the Observer. That's the whole reason he wasn't on commentary that night,
which makes this JR and Lawler's first pay-per-view together, you know, by themselves.
Yes.
Which it seems like, you know, as bad as everything outside of the main event was, we did seem to get a lot of firsts or, you know, and a debut on this show. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot to talk about, even though it's a one-match card.
American Giant makes great clothing, sweatshirts, jeans, and more right here in the U.S. Visit American-Giant.com and get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com, code STAPLE20.